We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Live and local sports talk from the upstate for the upstate with G-Mac, JC, and Lonzo. This is The Huddle on ESPN Upstate.
Okay, let's go.
Heading into the weekend, final hour of The Huddle on ESPN Upstate for Friday afternoon. With Greg McKinney, J.C. Sherbert, and Lonzo, glad you're along with us. We'll get back to phone calls in a few minutes at 844-GSP-ESPN. If you want to text us, you can go ahead and do that anytime. 71307, our text line driven by Carolina Coaches RB Superstore. And we're on Twitter at ESPN Upstate. Right now we're going to go to the phones and bring in the new head coach of the Burns Rebels football team, Coach Reggie Shaw, coming up from AC Flora. Coach, how are you?
Doing great, guys. How about y'all?
Thanks for coming on with us today. Let me get this out of the way. Tell me about the name, spelled like Reggie, but not pronounced Reggie. What's behind that?
Yeah, you have to ask my dad on that one. It's some kind of family name. I tried to change my name when I was six, but it didn't go through. But he had a brother that was named this from, I don't know, way back, and the brother died as a baby, so he thought it would be a nice thing to do. I don't typically agree with him, but it is what it is.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's cool. Folks will get used to that, especially get back on the winning track up here at Burns. Tell us about this process. You've been at AC Flora, what, for four seasons now?
Four seasons, yeah. You know, just being up there in 06, you've made a lot of connections, and I knew Bobby before then, I guess about 2004. Met him in an FCA camp, and you know, just thought the world of those guys and the program that was built there. It was a kind of a family atmosphere, so it was a great experience for us. And when it came open and saw an opportunity, it kind of just worked out.
Now, what did you coach with Bobby up here? What were your position, coach?
Coached the DBs and special teams, kind of coordinated those, and you know, worked in the strength program as well. Tried to learn as much as I could and be a sponge that year.
All right. You still stay in touch with Bobby? He's down in Columbia too now.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Our families are very tight. We just took our boys to see the Hornets and the Warriors on Wednesday up in Charlotte. Still spend time occasionally together.
Very good. Well, Coach, let's talk about coming up here. First of all, are you able to come up immediately, or do you have to finish up some things at Flora?
Working on some things, negotiating, getting out of my contract here. I'm a science teacher, so it's not easy to find this time of year, but you know, looking in the next couple of weeks to think maybe finalize that deal.
All right. This Burns Rebels team, of course, only three wins last year, missed the playoffs for the first time since 1999, but a lot of talent coming back. That's the good news. What, 20 out of 22 starters are coming back. So you've got to be pumped up about that.
I'm excited. You know, I think everything's in place there. It just needs a little tweaking. I don't think it's broken. To give a car analogy, we just need to put a little air in the tires and maybe realign them a little bit.
What is your philosophy as far as the kind of offense that you would like to run at Burns? Will it be the wide-open offense we're used to at Burns?
Oh, no doubt. I think I've had a lot of success there, and it matches the skill sets. The bottom line is make sure that you're doing what matches your kids, and they're built for that. And so I don't think you come in and make any major changes. Just evaluate the current talent and make sure we're doing things to put them in position to be successful.
Not bringing the option offense to Burns.
I think I'd get run out of town first week.
Yeah, probably so. How about this defense? You mentioned you're a defensive coach by trade. What are your thoughts about the kind of defense, the alignment you plan to run? Anything you can tell us about that?
Well, from what I can tell, there's a lot of speed on defense, which is what I like to utilize to try to disrupt things, more of an aggressive, slanting, blitzing type defense that, you know, flies around the field and pursues well. That's the main thing. We want to tackle well and pursue the ball and try to disrupt the offense before they get a chance to get going.
I am sure that when Tony Gillespie and all the guys over at Burns were talking to you, they talked to you a lot about off-field stuff and the culture of Burns. And, of course, the thing Burns is known for is implementing a system at the with the youth ages of football and bringing that straight on through. Does your philosophy tie in with that?
That's wonderful. You know, that's something that the rest of us around the state have been trying to emulate, and it's hard to get going. So the fact it's already in place was a very attractive part of that, and I'm excited to have already met some of those guys, and there's an excitement year round for football there, and that's cool. That was created through that district partnership, and now I think it's expanded to about 13 sports, and so it's a perfect situation to develop talent and keep things very consistent.
Of course, there's a difference in the attention level and perhaps the pressure level when you're moving from AC Florida to Burns. I'm sure you're prepared for that.
No doubt. I think being up there in the past prepares you for that. But, you know, there's nothing like getting in the mix. You know, it'll be an adjustment, but it's an exciting challenge, and I think it's a good opportunity for us.
What about your history before you went to AC Florida? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I started at Fairfield Central for about 10 years. Buddy Pugh gave me my first job out of Newberry College. I did a GA year at Newberry, and for Mike Taylor, did a great job there. But I learned a lot from Buddy, one of the best high school coaches I think has ever been in the state. And he went on to USC and, you know, is currently at South Carolina State and has had a great career. But just learned how to deal with people and manage people and motivate people. He was a great mastermind at that, and he was pretty good at X's as well. From there, you know, learned a lot from Charlie Macaluso. He was a great example and a very organized person. Went on from there to Burns, left after 10 years, and came back for a short stint at Blythewood. That didn't last long, and then I had an opportunity to go over to Lippin, which is a private school, and that was unique. You had to learn how to coach what you had, and you didn't always have a lot of gifted athletes. And so, you know, every situation, I think, prepares you for the next one.
Talking to the new coach of the Burns Rebels, Reggie Shaw, coming up from AC Flora High School. Coach, how about your staff? Have you made any decisions about coordinators? Will you handle one side of the football or hire a couple of coordinators, or what are your thoughts on that?
I'm in the process of interviewing everybody there. I think you just, anytime you come into a place, you start from scratch. I want to hear from them, kind of peel the layers and onions back a little bit and hear from their heart and find out, you know, what motivates them and see if they fit into the program going further. You know, I had a lot of great coaches there. I don't foresee myself being a coordinator. I think a CEO approach would probably be best in this situation.
All right. And you've seen the schedule coming up for Burns. Just added Don Bosco, which is a pretty famous New Jersey program. They're coming into Nixon Field on September 1st. Your thoughts about the schedule and this region, this 5A region up here that's only five teams, but five really good teams.
No doubt. The schedule's pretty brutal. You know, it's a typical Burns schedule, playing an out-of-state team that's a national level. And so you're gonna have to bring your A game every week. You know, be prepared to coach and put you guys in position to be successful. The main thing going in is let's make sure we're prepared. Let's make sure we're fundamentally sound, and let's not beat ourselves. Things that I want to be sharp on is, you know, eliminating turnovers and playing good defense, and then moving the ball at will. Those are kind of philosophies I think that will bode well, but the region is tough. You got to be prepared every week. It's not only athletes; it's a physical region, and so that'll be a point of emphasis in the spring, is trying to find out who's got it in them and who doesn't, and try to develop that toughness.
Have you had a chance to meet with the returning players up here?
I have. I was able to do that before I met with anybody else. That was kind of a priority, and very impressed. Everybody was locked in, very focused, and I was able to observe some workouts. The guys are working hard, doing everything you expect at this time of year to be successful.
When do you guys start spring work?
That'll start probably first week in May. We're still finalizing our schedule, but usually try to go for those 3 weeks of May.
All right, very good. All right, Reggie Shaw, the new head coach of the Burns Rebels. Coach, of course, you know, we do your games on the radio here at ESPN Upstate, so we'll be talking a lot.
Yes,
and congratulations on the hire, and welcome in.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate all you do. Look forward to working with you.
All right, Coach Reggie Shaw of the Burns Rebels taking over that program, and well, still down in Columbia right now at AC Flora, but trying to negotiate when he can get up here. The sooner the better, I would imagine, because spring practice not too far away. Congratulations to him on getting that job at Burns, and looking forward to seeing what he does there. All right, phone lines open to you at 844-477-3776. You want to text us? You can do that at 71307. Today you're R.H.
Yeah.
R.H. Sherbert.
That's a nice, that's like a name from There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel Plainview, and this is my associate, R.H. Sherbert. He's an oil man, like I am.
And he hates rats.
And he hates rats.
Welcome in. That's a long story. Anyway, 844-477-3776. You can text us 71307. Told you a little bit about this yesterday. Thought you'd let you hear some of the comments of Cleveland Browns left tackle Joe Thomas about the upcoming draft. He wants the Browns to go defense. That's what he thinks. And here's some of what he said about why they shouldn't draft a quarterback with the number one overall pick.
So my concern with if you reach to take a quarterback with the first pick are twofold. First of all, if you draft a pro-style quarterback, it's going to take a minimum of 3 years before they're really ready to contribute and help take you to the playoffs, which is where we're trying to go. And the second thing is, if you draft a quarterback and he's not who you thought he was, he's going to get discarded and you're going to have nothing to show for the first overall pick. But if you draft a defensive end, a linebacker, cornerback, you'll be able to find a way to get him on the field to contribute, even if he's not that Pro Bowl type guy that you thought he was.
I mean, you could say that every year, right? Every year you could say, yeah, you can probably salvage another position player, but if it's a quarterback and he's not very good, you're going to have to make a change there. I don't know.
I mean, that's basically pointing out the obvious. You can only play one quarterback at a time, mm-hmm. or whatever, and you don't normally play your quarterbacks on special teams. But,
right.
You know, you're talking about a pro. I mean, look, he used the word pro style. I mean, is Deshaun Watson not a pro style quarterback? I think he is.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there'd be some differences in what he needs to do in the NFL.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, he's got to learn to work from under center,
yeah.
And stuff like mm-hmm. that. But I think some things are obvious. And I think that, you know, you can really overthink it. And, you know, it's a fact quarterback's the most important position. And it doesn't matter what kind of talent you have at the other spots. If you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to win. Very often.
Yeah. No, look, yeah. I get the argument if you want to say, hey, this is not the best quarterback class, and we're not going to go quarterback number one this year, if you want to make that argument. But just to say you should never go quarterback with a number one overall pick, I mean, you know.
I just don't. I don't
that's
agree
crazy.
With that. I mean, you know, and look, the Browns, let's face, the Browns have been burned, you know, by
right.
some pretty rough picks. But I think this is a different situation. It's a different player. It's a guy that, you know, you saw no I mean, you know, so they drafted Brady Quinn a couple years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Brady Quinn got a lot of credit for how he performed that year against Southern Cal. That was a good Southern Cal team in 05. And they almost won. But they almost won, Greg. Almost.
Right.
He didn't get it done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and so you look at Deshaun Watson, you know, four or five times this season, he had to put the team on his back in order for them to win the Louisville game. I mean, they're giving up 26 straight points, and Lamar Jackson's running crazy, and, you know, people left the stadium. I mean, you know, and he leads them back, and, you know, Alabama. Jalen Hurts runs into the end zone. It's 31-28 with 2 minutes to go. He leads them back. I mean, there isn't a whole lot of examples of other quarterbacks that you can point to that consistently, the whole 3 years he played, when they were in trouble, he not only was forced to come through, but he did come through. Even in the game they lost against Pitt, even in the game he lost against Alabama last year in the championship game, he was lights out. Who has that body of work? I just, you know, I don't know. I mean, you could say Vince Young did 10, 15 years ago and point to him and all that. But, you know, Vince Young was a guy that, you know, should have turned out. And I don't think anybody's going to, you know, blame you if you don't take I mean, if for taking Vince Young in the first round. So I don't know, man. I don't know why there's this debate about Deshaun Watson, you know. And look, there was a debate about Cam Newton, too, for a while. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yeah.
And then, the Panthers took him number one overall. So it'll probably play out that way, in my opinion.
Yeah. There was a question. You know, the Panthers probably would have had Andrew Luck. I mean, they would have had Andrew Luck had he come out. Mm-hmm. But he didn't. He went back. Yes. And so a lot of people said, hey, don't take Cam Newton. That's risky.
No, I mean, it's risky. Took him to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah. You know, and he's been up and down. Lots of guys have been up and down. And Deshaun may be up and down. We're not saying that he won't be.
It's the National Football League, you know.
Yeah. May be the case. Sounds like Thomas, though, wants him to go, Myles Garrett. He wants him to get a pass rusher. But he doesn't make the pick. 844-477-3776. Ralph wants to talk about the Browns and their draft picks, I think. Hey, Ralph.
How you doing today, fellas?
Doing well. How are you?
Ralph.
Doing great, thanks. I can't wait till next week. But anyway, I get what Joe Thomas is saying, but if I'm the Cleveland Browns, I take a shot and grab Deshaun. The guy's a winner. Like you said, he lights out against Alabama, the best defensive team or whatever in college football the last 2 years, won a championship. And I need some work on the pro game, but the guy's a winner. I take a chance because the Patriots, otherwise they could, you know, trade the first pick for Garoppolo. We'll take that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're right. You really can't do anything in the NFL without a good quarterback. I think Trent Dilfer was the last less than average quarterback to win a Super Bowl, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, you just can't do it without a good quarterback. I would take a shot and go ahead and grab him. I mean, I know they have really bad luck, you know. All the picks, Johnny Manziel, you can go on down the line. But in my opinion, grab the winner, man, because he is a stud, in my opinion.
All right, Ralph. Not going to argue with you, certainly. We appreciate the call, man. Thanks. Call back anytime. Here's an update from the Falcons on their injury-hampered players as we head into the final week before the Super Bowl. Dan Quinn said that Julio Jones returned to limited participation today in practice, recovering from the toe sprain. The initial plan was to rest Jones and the center, Alex Mack. Mack has a fibula injury. For the entire week, they weren't going to practice today. But Jones practiced today. Mack did not. Quinn says he was limited. Julio Jones was limited, and we held out Alex Mack like the plan. We'll get both those guys back into action for next week. So I don't know if that's a good sign that Julio is a little better than they anticipated or if they just decided, you know, what the heck, we'll get him out there today. He suffered the toe sprain in the loss at Kansas City, missed two regular season games, aggravated it in the win over Seattle. Then was great against Green Bay, 180 yards, two touchdowns, nine catches. When asked about his health yesterday, Julio Jones said, "I feel great." Mack suffered a fibula injury in the NFC Championship game. Devontae Freeman stepped on him. Mack exited for one play, then he returned, and then he set out the final series of that game in favor of Ben Garland. So, you know, nothing negative about those injuries. Maybe a little bit more positive than anticipated for the Falcons. They will leave on Sunday for Houston. And so next week we will have the hoop-de-doo from Houston. We will have the media frenzy leading up to the Super Bowl next week. So, got to have both those guys. Both of those guys. Obviously got to have Julio, and he needs to have a big game. But Mac's important too, man. I mean, he's made such a difference on that offensive line.
Oh, yeah. And the whole group up front, because the Patriots are going to bring it. So it's a situation where if they have issues on the offensive line, it can throw the timing of that. That offense right now is in sync.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have your guy up front, you could probably throw that off really quick, and the chances of a Patriots win increase. By the way, I want to mention this. I was driving in today up 385 from downtown, passed a SUV with Patriots flags and a Patriots license plate on the front.
There you go.
South Carolina tag. So there's another
another
Patriots fan here in town.
So. Yeah, they're out here. They're out here. You see any Falcon stuff? I haven't seen any Falcon stuff.
No, not at all.
We need to see some in this next week. The Falcons, this trip to the Super Bowl is helping, you know, because they have the new stadium opening next year, and they're selling PSLs, personal seat licenses, for the new stadium. And guess what? The sales are good. You know, when your team is good, it's funny how that helps. The Falcons sold 10 times the amount of personal seat licenses in the past 2 weeks compared to the average week for 6 months before that. So per week, they're running 10 times what they have been running. That according to the parent company of the team owned by Arthur Blank. Steve Cannon is the CEO of AMB Group. He said, "We closed down the Georgia Dome in style. And what our team has done has allowed us to take advantage of opening the new Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Thanks to the recent push," Cannon said, "the team has sold more than 75% of the PSLs now. 88 sections in the lower and upper bowl are completely sold out. More than 90% of the suites are sold out." Pretty good. Sales of the personal seat licenses to cover the whole stadium range from $500 to $45,000 per seat. I'll take two. $500 to $45,000. They were said to be going slowly early last year, about a year ago, but things started turning around in May after the team announced their concession prices. Going to be the lowest concession prices in major team sports. They're going to have hot dog, pretzel, popcorn, water, and soda for $2 a piece.
That's an amazing deal.
That's a deal. And that helped. That helped them jack up the PSL sales. But I think having a trip to the Super Bowl is helping even more.
Yeah.
So they're going to be fine. They're going to be fine when they open that new place up. Looks like everything is running along nicely. Amazing how winning helps that. 844-GSP-ESPN, text line 71307, powered by Carolina Coaches RV Superstore, and Twitter at ESPN Ups. Big basketball games, college basketball games this weekend involving in-state teams. Big one for Furman. They got a three-game winning streak, and they go up to UNC Greensboro tomorrow afternoon, and they'll be playing for a share of first place in the Southern Conference. Tip-off 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Furman enters at 13-8 overall, 6-2 in SoCon play. After running their home winning streak to 14 games when they blew out Western on Wednesday, 85-37, Timmins Arena. Devin Sibley had 25 points. Chris Acox had 12 points and 11 rebounds. This will be the 30th game between Furman and UNC Greensboro. The Paladins lead the series 15-14. Last year in Greensboro, the Spartans won 67-66 on a jumper in the final seconds. And then Furman won 79-72 in Greenville. Furman made it 2-0 against the Spartans as they won in the Southern Conference Tournament, 80-64 in Asheville. So big one. Good luck to Nico Medved. Just got his extension announced yesterday at Furman, and it's a big game this weekend. Unfortunately, it's not in Greenville. It's up in Greensboro, but you can make the trip up there and support the Paladins if you're a Furman fan. Clemson Tigers play at noon tomorrow at Peterson Events Center as they take on Pittsburgh. And the Tigers are 11-8, only 1-6 in the ACC. Pittsburgh also 1-6 in the ACC. They're 12-8 overall.
So, got blown out earlier.
Oh, man, like 55 points.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Clemson, needless to say, Clemson needs it. They need it badly, man. Mm-hmm. They need to win this. Clemson has won the last two meetings between these two teams. Got some scoring punch on the court in this game. Pitt has Jamal Artis and Michael Young, 1-2 in the ACC in scoring. That just goes to show you can have a couple of big scorers without really being successful. They both average over 20 points a game. Jerome Blossom game at Clemson is 7th in the league at 18.1 per game. He needs just 8 points to become the 11th player in Clemson history with 1,500 points in a career. He's posted 20 or more points in 5 of their last 6 games. So that's a big one for the Clemson Tigers. And then South Carolina plays at Missouri in the SEC tomorrow night at 8:30. Gamecocks playing well, and Missouri not one of the better teams in the league. So even though it's on the road, JC, the Gamecocks need to go take care of business in this one. It's a game you don't need to lose.
Yeah, they got a couple, at Missouri and at LSU back to back. Those two teams aren't all that great, and you know, this is one of those things where this comes back to kind of haunt you if you don't take care of business when it comes to selection time. You know, and a lot kind of factors into that, the RPI and all that. So it's not the end of the world if they lose it, but I mean, there's really no reason. I mean, Gamecocks are 3-2 on the road this year in true road games, 4-3 away from Colonial Life Arena. They've lost one game on the road, or one game really all year, with Thornwell in the lineup. Missouri and LSU are combined 1-14 in the league. They're combined 11-11 at home, which is, Missouri's 4-7 at their home arena. Mm. The AD had to send a letter out in the non-conference saying, it will get better, don't worry. They've lost 11 games in a row, and then LSU's lost 6.
Mm.
And to be honest, LSU should have made a coaching change last year after that team they had with Ben Simmons did not make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that's not good.
That was pathetic. So, you know, you got these two teams, but they're road games. And Columbia, Missouri is a long way. Baton Rouge is a long way. Those are the two of the longer road trips the Gamecocks will take this year. But you just don't want to lose them. I mean, you just don't want to lose these games. I mean, it's a situation where it can only hurt you. You know, if you win it, it's a road win. That does count statistically more in the RPI, regardless of who you're playing. But if you lose it, it could be what the committee terms a bad loss and can send the Gamecocks back toward the bubble. They're not on the bubble right now, but they could get back there. It's January 27th.
Yeah.
You know, so we got another month to play.
Yeah, they need to keep the momentum going into February. It'd be interesting to see how Dozier looks, because he didn't play much the other day. And you mentioned they've only lost one game with Thornwell playing, but they haven't lost any with both Dozier and Thornwell playing, because Dozier was out for Kentucky.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, and those two guys together, they're pretty strong.
They're a pretty strong team. And I thought they, you know, even though Dozier didn't play a whole lot against Auburn, I thought they played really well. The problem with that is Auburn, and I've seen this in basketball, the Auburn game, Gamecocks were clicking on all cylinders. You got a combined 40 points from Notis and Mackey, who normally aren't going to give you that. You're going on the road in an arena that's probably not going to be hopping, but it's still their arena. Missouri's lost 11 games in a row. You know those guys would like to, you know, get off the schneid and get a victory. You go cold shooting and you don't have Dozier to kind of make some plays. I mean, that could be problematic. The good news is Gamecocks play defense so well, and they've consistently played it so well. It's hard to imagine that, you know, they're going to go up there and sort of let Missouri score all over them or whatever. But it's just a game, you know, because of some things that happened last year. You just don't want to, you know, you don't want to drop it if you're a Gamecock fan. I mean, right now, you know, even though Kentucky would win the SEC in terms of the number one seed in the tournament, if the Gamecocks finish with as many losses as Kentucky has and they have as many right now, they could be SEC champions, SEC co-champions. So, I mean, they're not only fighting for an NCAA tournament, they're still very much alive and in the thick of things to win their first SEC championship in 20 years, Greg. So it's wow. There's a lot to play for and a lot not to let up for. But, you know, it's just Missouri is one of those things that's, you know, has to be a little bit scary if you're the Gamecocks, just because they're so bad. And so you just kind of wonder if you'll be able to get up for it or not.
Some of the other games you might want to pay attention to tomorrow on the college basketball schedule. You get Notre Dame at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's playing very well. And Notre Dame's number 14 in the country. So that's at McCamish Pavilion in Atlanta at noon on the U tomorrow. Florida State will play at Syracuse at the Carrier Dome tomorrow at noon. That'll be on ESPN2. Number 9, North Carolina goes to Miami, Coral Gables. CBS game at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Might be worth a view there. Number 25, Florida at Oklahoma on ESPN. 2 o'clock in Norman. Let's see. What else do we get? Tennessee hosting Kansas State at 2 o'clock. And, then later in the day, number 22, Maryland goes to Minnesota. Number 16, Creighton hosting DePaul. Number 17, Duke. They're struggling. They go to Wake tomorrow. That's a 3 o'clock start. Lawrence Joel Coliseum in Winston-Salem. After Mike Krzyzewski called the team over to the house and said, you're kicked out of the locker room and you can't wear Duke gear on campus, at least. We'll see how that impacts the Blue Devils. He's trying to light a little fire there, and we'll see if that works. Number 5, Baylor plays at Ole Miss tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. And then the big one tomorrow night at 6:15 at Rupp Arena. Number 2, Kansas. Number 4, Kentucky. ESPN will have it. That's worth a watch right there if you're a college basketball fan. Kansas and Kentucky. Part of that challenge that's going on, the conference challenge that's going on. So, pretty good stuff. I mean, you know, every Saturday you're going to have some big games, and this one is no exception. So we'll look forward to talking about those a little bit. Number 3, Gonzaga goes to Pepperdine tomorrow night. Late game on ESPN2 at 10 o'clock out in Portland, or I'm sorry, in Malibu, California. A couple notes about Clemson and South Carolina. First of all, if you want to hear Will Muschamp talk about the Gamecock signing class, they're going to have an event in Greenville, just been announced. It's next Thursday, February 2nd, signing day roundup event, open to the public. It's going to happen at the Hilton Greenville, Orchard Park Drive, from 6:30 to 8 o'clock, co-hosted by the Gamecock Club and some other organizations. And Coach Will Muschamp will update the 2017 signing class. Tickets are $45. And business casual attire is requested. So, Alonzo, when you go out there, you can't wear your Chiefs T-shirt.
What about my hair? Do I have to?
You need to get a cut.
I probably shouldn't go then.
me and Alonzo look like we should be hosting a rock and roll show.
That's right.
We could be in a band.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that'd be a good chance to hear what Muschamp has to say about the class. Again, that's next Thursday, 6:30, out at the Hilton Greenville, right off of 385. And I saw this note about Clemson's national championship. There may be, looks like the this is on the fast track to get some national title license plates in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Harvey Peeler proposed a bill last week to create a custom national championship license plate available statewide. He's a Clemson grad, so he had his pride and reasons to push that, but why not? So it was passed yesterday in the Senate. Final step would be a vote in the House. These will cost, what a guess? Have you seen it?
Mm-mm.
How much would a Clemson national championship license plate cost?
It's probably about $75.
Zo?
I'm going to go with 50.
JC wins. It's 70. 70 plus any regular DMV fees. But the good news is profits fund academic scholarships at Clemson. So you're doing something good there.
That reminds me, I gotta pay my car tax. It's the month that my plate expires. So I gotta go do this.
You probably should.
That reminds me, I have to get my license renewed. And I have it's every 10 years now.
Has it been 10 years?
It's been 10 years since I got my license.
It was a big ordeal last year because I was moving from out of state. And so I had to turn in my Tennessee plate, get a this, that, and the other, get a new license, and it took me all day. But this year should be pretty...
I'm concerned because decent. I just had my eyes checked. They gave me glasses. I can't wear the glasses because they make me dizzy. Now I'm worried I might need the glasses in order... Do you still have to take the eye test to get them renewed?
Think you might, right? Mm. Think you might. I'm not positive.
Got to get the eye test. You'll pass, though. It's
so
easy.
If I don't pass, you think they'll buy it that I can't come to work because I don't have a license?
Yeah, try that. Good. Try that. That's your work.
You're going to lose your job, man.
Let me leave you with this. Saturday Down South came out with a list of the worst cupcake games in the Southeastern Conference this year in football. The worst games.
Well, so this has nothing to do with cupcakes. Okay. All right.
I'm making you hungry, right? The worst cupcake games. Number 10, Ole Miss, UT Martin.
Yeah.
Woo!
Although UT Martin has played SEC teams before, so yeah. I don't know that's all that terrible.
Number 9, Auburn Mercer, September 16th.
Yeah, Mercer just now had a new football, got a football team.
And Bobby Lamb.
Yeah, didn't he? Bobby Lamb.
September 16th. All right, number 8 on the list, the Florida Gators and Northern Colorado on September 9th.
UNC.
Yeah. 6-5 FCS team. Number seven is LSU, Ed Orgeron, against UT Chattanooga.
Man, UT Chattanooga was only down 14-3 to Bama this year at halftime. Mm-hmm. They're not that bad. How does that rank above Northern Colorado?
Well, I think they're going, yeah, I guess they're going best to worst.
Most of the people that write, not all, but most of the people that write for Saturday on South, they're like interns. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, I wouldn't.
That is so inside of me.
I was waiting for the dig.
I would never, ever, like, trust their opinions. I saw the worst article ever written by SEC Country the other day talking about style of offense. But that's, we should have discussed that 10 minutes ago when we were like, what are we going to discuss?
Yeah. Number six is Missouri State. That's pretty
That's a rivalry. No, because their defensive coordinator took the Missouri State job.
Come on, it's Missouri State.
The Bears.
All right.
Used to be Southwest Missouri State.
You get some points for it being a rivalry, being an in-state
rivalry game.
Yeah. Number five, Vanderbilt. Think about Vanderbilt being involved in a cupcake game. That's kind of funny on its face. But anyway, Vanderbilt against Alabama A&M September 9th.
Alabama A&M is terrible. Auburn played them this past year. But,
yeah.
You know, the recently extended they're going to extend Derek Mason's contract.
So yeah.
That's you know, a few more years of mediocrity, followed by a dramatic fall to the bottom of the league.
Well, Auburn and Middle Tennessee beat Alabama A&M 55-0. Both of them did.
Yes.
Last year. Number four is Arkansas against Florida A&M, September 2nd.
FAMU, the band's good. The band's awesome.
Well,
they're
Miami.
Not drunk like the Stanford band, right?
Right.
No, they are not a suspended band.
Miami beat Florida A&M 70-3 last year.
Yeah, in the opener. That was a heck of a game.
The third worst cupcake game in the Southeastern Conference this year is Texas A&M against Nichols. Nichols almost beat Georgia, right?
Yes, they lost by 2 points. Yeah. How is this one so ranked higher than the Alabama A&M?
Mm-hmm.
Who is this person that's writing these articles? Jeez.
Joe Cox? I don't know. That's his name. Joe Cox.
Is that the former Georgia quarterback?
I don't know about that.
The ginger?
My gosh. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Number two worst game in the SEC this year. September 9th, Tennessee, Indiana State.
The Sycamores. That's Larry Bird's alma mater.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Larry Bird and Peyton Manning at that game.
Yeah, that's cool. 4-7 FCS team. They lost to Missouri State by 21 points last year at home. At home. So Tennessee, Indiana State. And number one, you know number one's going to involve Alabama because they're the best team in the conference, so they're the biggest mismatch. It's one of the teams we mentioned earlier. November 18th, Alabama plays Mercer.
Yeah, Alabama, man, they in that game before the Auburn game, they find the worst team they can possibly find and bring them in. They played Georgia State. Yeah, I think Georgia State was in the second year of their program a few years ago. But credit Nick Saban with giving some of these teams a chance. I mean, I don't think he's going to be putting Georgia Southern on the schedule again anytime soon.
Well, Mercer was 6-5 last year. They lost to Chattanooga, Wofford, and the Citadel, and Samford last year. The folks at Saturday Down South says the walk-ons at Alabama could win this game.
Well, maybe. Let's not get crazy.
Yeah, let's not get crazy.
Notice the game that's not on there is Wofford and South Carolina.
No, that is not.
Nobody's going to put that game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.